Ed Path, former pastor of Moody Church in Chicago and a prolific Christian author in a generation past, tells a story of his two girls when they were both young. And he heard his wife say to the girls, "Girls, go get your father for breakfast." The oldest girl rushed up the stairs, and by the time the younger one made it up the stairs to the room where her father was, the big sister had already gotten there and she was coming out, and she said, "I've already told Daddy, breakfast is ready." And then, like sisters are prone to do, she said, "And besides, I have all of Daddy." Well, the younger sister, that hit her kind of hard, and a tear began to run down her cheek. So Alan took his little girl, put her on his knee, and held her close to comfort her. The little girl put her head on her daddy's shoulder, and then all of a sudden she got this big smile on her face. She sat up and she looked at her older sister and she said, "You might have all of Daddy, but Daddy has all of me." Well, we are children of our Heavenly Father. And we know that when God has all of us, the storms won't threaten us. Story of Paul's shipwreck, Acts chapter 27. I'm telling you, this would make a great movie. In fact, Paul's life would make a great movie, but there's danger, there's intrigue, there's drama, there's courage. Now, you know the story. Paul is a prisoner, really, has been for some time. He is a prisoner on his way to Rome for trial before Caesar. And the trip that he takes is an incredible story. I mean, you really can't make up stuff like this. Through it all, Paul trusts God. And the storms don't threaten him because God has all of him. So we can learn a lot from Paul's example in this chapter when we face the storms and the struggles of this life. And the first lesson I want us to learn from Acts chapter 27 is don't be in a hurry to finish your journey. Don't be in a hurry to finish your journey. 2009, the Ketchum Global Research Network asked 1,000 U.S. adults ages 25 to 54. They did this survey and they asked 1,000 adults what they think about most when they're in the shower in the morning. What do you think about most when you're in the shower in the morning? Here were the top four responses that Americans think about as they're getting ready for their day. In the shower. Number one response was they were thinking about to-do lists. Number two, problems and worries. Number three, daydreams. And number four, work. So those are the top four things that people think about in America when they're in the shower. What do you think about? Don't answer that. You don't have to answer it. What do you think about as you begin your day? What's on your mind? I mean, the truth is, we tend to obsess about all of our needs, our plans, our goals, our dreams, our problems, all of that stuff that makes up what we face that day or that week. Whether it's for the day or for the future, our minds gear up and we're thinking about all of these things. And we stress over the tasks we haven't completed or the problems we're going to face. Now, I know that I am often in such a hurry to get things done that I neglect the time it takes to listen to God sometimes. Do you ever do that? Sort of rush into your day, you got all these things you got to do, right? You get up in the morning, your mind's thinking about those things, you rush into your day, got a lot to do, and don't take the time to listen to God. I rush ahead with my plans, my tasks, got lots of things to get done, places to go, jobs to finish. These are important. Always in a hurry. That's kind of our cultural mindset. When I was in high school, I couldn't wait to get to college. When I was in college, I couldn't wait to get out and go to work. When I was working, I couldn't wait to go to seminary. When I was in seminary, I couldn't wait to get out in the ministry. So on it goes through life. We won't keep going. I don't know what... Maybe if I can't wait, you know... I don't know what comes next, but... You know, we're always in a hurry to move on. We spend our lives wishing our lives away. Right? Yeah, you never do that, right? We're in a hurry to finish our journey. And you know what God says so often? Wait. Hold on. Because you know what happens? God has lots of detours, doesn't he? Get all these plans and then God interrupts. And the detours and the transitions all take place. Unexpected twists to our journey. Because God knows that the journey is just as important as the end of the journey. It's all part of the process. So here we have Paul. Paul has been imprisoned now for over 2 years in the city of Caesarea. What was Paul's goal? Paul's goal, we studied earlier in Acts, he wanted to get to Rome. He wanted to go to Rome and minister for God in Rome. That was his plan, his agenda. He's been in prison for 2 years in Caesarea. Finally, he's on his way to Rome here in chapter 27. But I want you to notice all of the strange twists and turns that the journey takes in this chapter alone. Verse 1, Acts 27. Let's pick up here. And when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they proceeded to deliver Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in an Andromedan ship, which was about to sail to the regions along the coast of Asia, we put out to sea, accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. The we passage, we're here in the we passage again, so this is Dr. Luke who is writing, with Paul being there and Aristarchus. And the next day we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul with consideration and allowed him to go to his friends and receive care. And from there we put out to sea and sailed under the shelter of Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed through the sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra in Lycia. And there the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy, and he put us aboard it. And when we had sailed slowly for a good many days and with difficulty had arrived off Cnidus, since the wind did not permit us to go further, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone, and with difficulty sailing past it, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. And when considerable time had passed, and the voyage was now dangerous, since even the fast was already over, Paul began to admonish them and said to them, "Men, I perceive that the voyage will certainly be attended with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." But the centurion was more persuaded by the pilot and the captain of the ship than by what was being said by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable for wintering, the majority reached a decision to put out to sea from there, if somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, facing southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. And when a moderate south wind came up, supposing that they had gained their purpose, they weighed anchor and began sailing along Crete, close inshore. All right, it's late summer as the ship leaves the harbor of Caesarea. in late summer and early fall, the prevailing winds from the west are from the west and northwest, making a trip westward across the Mediterranean Sea a very difficult trip. What you have to understand is there are no passenger ships in these days. They booked on commercial freighting ships. And that's how people traveled. There were no passenger ships. By the way, when we traveled to Pakistan as a child and back, we traveled on freighters. We didn't travel on passenger ships back in the early 1960s. We traveled on freighters. And it took a month, by the way, to get from America to Pakistan by freight ship. And you don't have all the amenities on the freight ship. Well, they're traveling on freight ships. That's how you traveled in those days. People would just book passages on the local freighters. The Roman soldiers would have boarded a coasting vessel with their prisoner, and they would have traveled along the coastline to avoid the westerly winds. So they would have gone from Caesarea here. They would have bounced their way up the coast to Sidon, where they stopped. By the way, prisoners were responsible for their own supplies. That meant Paul had to get his own food. They didn't provide it for him. And so when they got to Sidon, you notice that he stops in and he's allowed to go, and they connect with the local church there in Sidon and for care and supplies. And he's traveling with Dr. Luke and Aristarchus for care. But they have to get their own supplies through this whole trip. The ship sails under the protection then here of Cyprus, because it's not as rough out here as it would be trying to go against these winds. It's going to come along the coast, comes to Myra here. That took about 2 weeks and was about 500 miles. At that point, the centurion has to find another ship, because this is a coasting vessel. It's not going to Italy. And so he books them on a freight ship that is traveling to Italy, an Alexandrian ship. Alexandria was down here. It's the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. All the grain and wheat came from there. This is up here in Myra now. This grain ship was part of the grain fleet. The Romans contracted with ships to be a part of their grain fleet, because grain had to get to Rome, and they needed to eat. And so they would contract with ship owners to be a part of what was known as the grain fleet, and they gave them insurance, because it was dangerous to travel across the open ocean. They gave them insurance. They made sure that they were insured. If they lost their grain, they lost their ship, all of that, they would be protected by the Roman Empire, and they would get their money back. So they're booking on this freighter, this grain ship. The grain freighter would have been about 140 feet long, 36 feet wide, very stable vessel for long distances. There's no power, obviously, back then. It's all wind power. There would have been no rudder. They used two giant paddles that stuck out the back end, and that's how they steered these ships. Very stable vessels, big square sail, but they had one drawback. You can't sail into the wind with these things. There's no way to sail into the wind. And so because the wind is coming this way, they try to get along here the coastline, but the wind is too vicious, so they go south down here to Crete, and they're going to come along the southern side of Crete to avoid the winds, to avoid the bad weather. And they put in at a small harbor here in called Fair Haven on the southern side of Crete. At this point, it's now late September, early October. One thing you need to know about the shipping industry on the Mediterranean is that once they hit November, you don't go on a ship. The shipping closes. The Mediterranean Sea closes from November to March every year. People just didn't put out. It was too dangerous. So they are almost at the end of the season to get started now across the open ocean. So they hold a little conference, and Paul was asked to be a part of that conference. Always interesting. Probably asked because he was a religious figure, right? people always kind of like religious figures, you know. There's kind of safety in that, so you're going to consult with this religious figure. Even though he's a prisoner, he's still a well-known religious figure. He's a part of this conference. And he advises them to do what? Stay here for the winter. That's another 3 months. Wait. Don't go. He warned them that there was great danger coming. But the centurion didn't listen to Paul. He listened to the owner of the ship. The captain of the ship would have been the owner. That's the way they did business in those days. Listened to the owner of the ship, and it seemed reasonable. The next port is only about 50 miles away. Coming around Crete, this is a bigger map here. They're going to come around the Cape. The next port is in here. And 50 miles away, you know, better port, better accommodations, more comfortable to spend 3 or 4 months there, which they would have to do for the winter. So they decide to go ahead. And as we shall see, they should have listened to God's warning rather than go ahead. But it seemed reasonable. Slight south wind picks up. They head out around. They're going to head out around this cape here, this point, and seems a reasonable thing to do. Here's the thing, though. What is reasonable, a reasonable choice by human standards, is unreasonable if God's warned against it. Right? Lots of things in life seem very reasonable, very logical by human standards, choices that we must make, advice that we get. But if God's told you not to do it in His Word, it's totally unreasonable, even if it seems reasonable. Right? And yet we put our trust so often in the reasonableness of what others tell us we ought to do. The story is told that a national magazine assigned a photographer to take pictures of a forest fire. And they told him that he would drive up to this airport. There would be a small Cessna there waiting at the airport to fly him over the fire to get his pictures. So the photographer arrives at the airport just an hour before sundown. Sure enough, there's a small Cessna already warmed up, ready to go on the airstrip. He jumps in with his equipment. He shouts, "Let's go!" The pilot's a kind of a tense little man. Turns the plane into the wind. They take off. And soon they're up in the air and they're flying a little bit erratically, but they're flying. And the photographer says, "Look, fly over the north side of the fire and make several low-level passes." And the pilot says, "Why?" "Because I'm going to take pictures. I'm a photographer. That's what photographers do." The pilot replied, "You mean you're not the flight instructor?" Big problem. Many people are like that photographer. We put our trust in untrustworthy pilots. We rush ahead with our plans. We forget to listen to God in the process of making our decisions in life. People give us advice. We follow that advice. But it is God and God's Word that we should pay attention to above all else. When we rush ahead, when we refuse to listen to what God says, you know what's going to happen? We're going to have problems in life. We'll make a mess of our lives. We'll make bad choices, when choices we could have avoided if we had just listened to what God says. When God says, "Wait, slow down, hold on, listen to me," we better wait. We better listen. Second principle this morning: take courage in the storm and trust God for His plan. Verse 14. "But before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called a Euryclo." Rushing down from the wind, there's an 8,000-foot mountain on this island, and the wind rushing off that could be very powerful. "A violent wind called the Euryclo, and when the ship was caught in it and could not face the wind, we gave way to it, let ourselves be driven along, and running under the shelter of a small island called Clauda, we were scarcely able to get the ship's boat under control. And after they had hoisted it up, they used supporting cables in undergirding the ship. In fearing they might run aground on the shallows of Syrtis, they let down the sea anchor and so let themselves be driven along. The next day, as we were being violently storm-tossed, they began to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. And since neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm was assailing us, from then on, all hope of our being saved was gradually abandoned. And when they had gone a long time without food, then Paul stood up in their midst and said, "Men, you ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail from Crete and incurred this damage and loss. And yet now I urge you to keep up your courage, for there shall be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood before me, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. Therefore, keep up your courage, men, for I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on a certain island.'" So, just as they round the cape there on Crete, the winds change violently. And the sailors had a name for this wind, by the way. You saw it in the chapter. It's called the Euryakilo. It's actually a combination of Greek and Latin. And it means, basically, this is a northeaster, or what we would say was a nor'easter, that hit them. The winds change. They're now coming from the northeast, and they are driving the ship before them. And they can't bring the ship into the wind. They get a little reprieve from an island, which is about 23 miles off the coast. They're able to bring they would have pulled the dinghy behind them in the ship. Well, it's probably full of water by now, and they're able to bring that aboard with much effort, get that safely stowed on the ship. They also had cables. These were wooden ships. So what they would do is it was a dangerous job, but they'd put the boat out, little boat out, and they'd wrap the ship with the cable, and they'd tie it tight so it would hold the wood together so it wouldn't break apart in the wave action. And they would do that repeatedly around the entire ship, the ship hull. That's how they would protect themselves. They tried dragging their sea anchors, but hardly slowed them down. They're being driven southward to a region known as the Syrtis, which is down... Whoops. There we go, wrong. There we go. Right here. This area, graveyard of the Macedonian or the Mediterranean ship fleets, because there were shoals and sandbars and other things here, and many ships had run aground here. Many, many lives over the years had been lost in this area. Very afraid of this area. The wind, they know, is driving them in that direction. Now, in the midst of this nor'easter, Paul gathers them together in the main room of the ship. He says, "I told you so. You should have listened to me." I think I'd have spent a little longer on the "I told you so" about that point, but he goes on. "God will keep you safe, though, because you are with me, and God has promised to take me to Rome, and he has promised me that all of you who are with me will be safe." Have you ever wondered this? How many times in life non-Christians are kept safe because they are associated with Christians whom God has a plan to carry out? We talk about collateral damage. There's collateral safety for those who are associated with other believers whom God is calling to serve him in some way. They're going to be kept safe because Paul is there, and God has a plan for Paul to fulfill in the city of Rome. Notice verse 23. This is the heart of the matter. Paul has two foundational principles that are the reason he can have courage in the face of danger in the middle of this storm. He says, "I belong to God and I serve God." That's foundational. The God who owns me, to whom I belong, and the God whom I serve, Those are the twin principles behind Christian faith, behind our confidence. When you know the God who owns you, He has all of you, and you know you are serving God with all that you have for Him, then you don't have to worry about the storms of life. And life can throw all sorts of problems at us, can't it? But if you know God has all of you, and you know that what you are doing is by God's call, you are serving Him, then you can be confident that, well, God will guide you and God will provide for you. But here's the flip side of that, right? If you're running away from God, if you don't want to listen to God, if you don't want to follow what God says, you don't have that kind of confidence in the decisions that you make, no matter how reasonable they might seem to the world. Because God is in control. And as they rounded that cape with a south wind, what did God do? He turned the wind completely around and blew a nor'easter at them. God can change the circumstances in an instant for every one of us. That's why if you're fighting God, if you're running away from God, you don't have that confidence. But if you know He has all of you, and you know you're serving Him, then you can trust God in the storm, and He'll take you through. All those late night worries, all of those financial stresses, all of those personal struggles are in God's hands. We know we can trust God because He has all of us. He is truly the Lord of the storm. What did Jesus say to Peter in the midst of that storm? Get out of the boat and walk on the water. Yeah, right! Walk on water in the middle of a storm. That's right, Peter. And Peter walked on water, didn't he? As long as he kept his eyes on Jesus. He's Lord of the storm. And that's why we can trust God to work out the problems, whatever they are, that we face in life. Many of you remember Robin and Karen Twombly. Robin Twombly was our youth pastor here 20 years ago and went on to pastor a church and then went back into the business world and is very active in their local church where they live now as an elder and a leader. Well, Robin and Karen are in Nicaragua right now. Their children are now young adults, and they felt God's call to do this, and they're in the process of adopting 4 little Nicaraguan children. But the process with the Nicaraguan government requires that they live in the country with the children for 3 to 5 months, the ones that they're going to adopt. So, and you can read about this if you do Facebook, and Karen has a wonderful blog, by the way. It's really fascinating to read. But, so Robin got done his job to go to Nicaragua end of July, I think, somewhere in there, 1st of August, to do all of the legal paperwork and all of the financial stuff and all of that. Well, government, financial difficulties, all kinds of problems have enveloped them. The quest was almost ended multiple times because of the craziness of red tape and government regulations, and Karen's back here fretting, trying to work through it all, and Robin's down there. But they got through all of that. Time and time again, God has taken them through it. They are now living with the 4 children there in Nicaragua. Karen has gone and joined Robin there. And she shared this past week about doing the laundry in a cement tub and a stone washboard. And you have to rub the soap, she said, into the laundry, then you soak it in the, the, the soaking tub, and then you take it out of the soaking tub and you put it on this stone washboard and you beat it and rub it and work it out, take it out of that, and then you put it in this rinsing cement tank. And she said, the little six-year-old, well, she said she's either six or seven, so the story keeps changing, but the little six-year-old wanted to help her, and so she was right there working with her through the whole thing and teaching her how to rub the soap in and how much soap to use and all of that. Karen said her back was breaking by the time this little girl, she said, I never saw a kid work so hard in all my life. But every few minutes she'd look up at me and she'd say, Mama. She was just so excited to be beside Mama. These are orphans. Well, Karen posted on Facebook last Thursday what she called a new house rule. The house rule is this: when it's a torrential downpour outside and the roof leaks, you're not allowed to stand under the leak with your mouth open to catch the water. Blech. New house rule. I bet you don't have that house rule in your house. They have it there. But Karen says the adoption is the hardest thing she has ever done in her life. Karen writes, adoption is the closest experience I've had to walking on water. I keep reminding myself to fix my eyes on Jesus, who is the only one who orders our steps and aligns everything to make it work. And here's another lesson she says she's learned. If I only do the things I can reasonably do, then I will never see God moving in my life. The more I do things bigger than me, for Him of course, the more clearly I see God moving and acting. Wow. The trusting in the Lord of the storm. God has all of them, and they feel that this is God's call on their lives. So He'll take care of the problems. And one by one He does. Extraordinary things happen when people follow the Lord. But there's one more lesson that Paul has for us in this story of courage and shipwreck. And it's one we don't want to learn. We don't like to learn. Remember that God sometimes sinks the ship to prove His power. I don't want my ship sunk, do you? Verse 27. But when the 14th night had come, as we were being driven about in the Adriatic Sea about midnight, the sailors began to surmise that they were approaching some land. They took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took another sounding and found it to be 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast four anchors from the stern and wished for daybreak. And as the sailors were trying to escape from the ship and had let down the ship's boat into the sea on the pretense of intending to lay out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it fall away. And until the day was about to dawn, Paul was encouraging them all to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day that you've been constantly watching and going without eating, having taken nothing. Therefore, I encourage you to take some food, for this is for your preservation. For not a hair from the head of any of you shall perish. Having said this, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of all, and he broke it and began to eat. Isn't it interesting how when things are tough, people are ready to listen to God and God's people, God's witness. All of them were encouraged, and they themselves also took food. And all of us in the ship were 276 persons. And when they'd eaten enough, they began to lighten the ship by throwing out the wheat into the sea. And when the day came, they could not recognize the land, but they did observe a certain bay with a beach, and they resolved to drive the ship onto it if they could. Casting off the anchors, they left them in the sea, while at the same time they were loosing the ropes of the rudders, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they were heading for the beach. But striking a reef where two seas met, they ran the vessel aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern began to be broken up by the force of the waves. And the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, that none of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wanting to bring Paul safely through, kept them from their intention and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest should follow, some on planks and others on various things from the ship. And thus it happened that they all were brought safely to the land. So after 14 days being driven to the sea of through the Sea of Adria, the there we go. They come to the island of Malta. By the way, it's not the Adriatic Sea as we know it in modern times. The Sea of Adria was the center part of the Mediterranean Sea. Arrive at night, put down the anchors. They can hear the breakers on the shore. Paul warns the centurion that if any of some of the sailors decide to make a go for it, pretending to be helping out, they're putting the lifeboat down and they're taking off. Paul says, look, if they go, your lives are not safe because God's the one in charge of all of this. So they cut free the lifeboat, which makes it more difficult. That's your lifeboat, and there it goes. But the centurion by now is listening totally to whom? Paul. God's witness. Paul has become the most trusted advisor, and God has a way of using you and me in times of difficulty in people's lives, because people will turn and listen in ways they never would have listened before they were in that crisis if we are available to be used of God. He encourages them. They eat. They're going to try and make it to land at a small beach, a little bay. Today it's called St. Paul's Bay there on the island of Malta. But they run aground. Ship is breaking. They abandon it. Centurion protects the prisoners because ordinarily they'd kill them all. And every one of the 276 lands safely. God keeps His word. Here's the lesson. Sometimes God lets our ship sink in order to show His power. You know, we put all of our faith in that job or that career or that bank account or the family, and God lets it fall apart. The ship we're trusting in sinks. What happens when you put all of your trust in that family, or you put all of your trust in that job, and it all falls apart on you? Where do you go then? What happens when you put all your faith in the job and you lose the job? God sometimes lets our ships sink, so we will put our trust in Him to take us through the rest of the storm. Who are you following is the big question. Gary Haugen is the founder of International Justice Mission. If you're not familiar with it, it's a tremendous organization. It's a Christian organization that frees young women from that are trapped in the sex trafficking trade here in the world, across the globe. Sex trafficking is a horrible evil that is enslaving young women around this world. And he leads this mission to free these young women from the sex trafficking evil. But he describes how he got involved with the start of the International Justice Mission. He remembers the day when he finally made a decision to abandon his career. He worked for the U.S. Department of Justice. He had a good career. But he abandoned it to become the first employee of a not-for-profit organization that didn't even really yet exist yet. The International Justice Mission. He'd worked for 3 years with some friends. They'd been setting this mission up, about this dream of following Jesus in the work of justice in this world. But then there came a day when he had to act, and he didn't have enough faith to really just walk away from his career. So he went into the Department of Justice and to his bosses, his supervisors, and he asked for a year-long leave of absence so that he could do this new not-for-profit organization. Guess what his bosses told him? Uh-uh. They politely declined. You're done. And he had to walk away from his career. And he suddenly felt very, very nervous for him, for his family. What was he really afraid of, he said. As he thought about it, he was afraid of humiliation. You know, here's this dream, you've got this dream, you're going to go follow this dream and it all falls apart and everybody laughs at you. And he wasn't really afraid that his kids would starve. I mean, they'd probably have to live with his parents for a while until he got another job if it all fell through. But he had a good education. He thought he could get a job. But it would be humiliating. And yet he sensed that God was inviting him to an extraordinary adventure. And deep inside, he was afraid of looking like a fool if it failed, a loser if it failed. He said it helped him because he writes, "When I am older," he thought, "do I really want to look back and say, yeah, I sense that God was calling me to lead a movement to bring rescue to people who desperately need an advocate in the world, but I was afraid of getting embarrassed, and so I never even tried?" Fear is normal, he writes, even among the earnest and devout, and it can be overcome. But first we must see the opportunity it provides, a revelation that only comes as we step up to the precipice of action. There comes that point, doesn't it? It comes to that point, doesn't it? You got to act. Paul's story is quite a story, isn't it? It's just amazing to think about how he walked this life for the Lord. Gary Haugen left his career on faith to follow God's call on his life. There's no room for wimps in the Christian life. It's an adventure to truly follow the Lord. By the way, did you know that this is the fourth time that Paul was shipwrecked? He's had a little experience with this. 2 Corinthians 11:25. Three times, he says, I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I spent in the deep. That's out in the ocean. Now, he wrote this long before this trip to Rome. So this is the fourth time he's been shipwrecked. I don't know. If I was Dr. Luke or Aristarchus, I would have probably said, whoa, you don't have a good track record whenever you go out on the ocean. Your history's not too good here, Paul. But Paul, you see, at this point in his life, he knew something. He knew that God would come through for him. Why? Because God had always done so in the past. When you're in crisis, when you're struggling, look back at your life. I do this sometimes in places and in situations where, you know, it's just, you go, wow, Lord, this is beyond me. I don't know what to do with this. But you look back over your life and you know what? You know that God has come through before. And then you know that God will come through again, right? It's that history of walking with God that tells you that, yes, He's still with me. He hasn't abandoned me. He has all of me. And so we can look ahead with confidence as we look back to see how God has been with us through it all. Corrie ten Boom was a Dutch Christian whose family helped Jews escape during Hitler's Holocaust. The Nazis eventually found out. They arrested the family. Her father and her sister, of course, died in the Nazi concentration camp. Corrie survived and became a great author, The Hiding Place, and all of those stories, and also a speaker after World War II. She knew what it meant to trust God in the hard times. God had come through for her time and time again. And so she knew what it meant to trust God in the storms of life. And I love her words of reminder for all of us. She says, in terms of our lives, don't bother to give God instructions. Just report for duty. Father, so often we're about giving you instructions, telling you how to fix the problems, asking you to take away the storm or protect the ship. Help us to give up giving you instructions and to report for duty and serve you. Because when you have all of us, we don't have to worry about the storms. In Jesus' name, amen. Hymn number